The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. Whatever stage your business is at, there's always time to imagine sustainable, positive change. AIB, for the life you're after.
Well, an interesting story on BBC this morning. It's talking about a tiny Caribbean island. And it says that back in the 1980s, when the internet was still in its infancy, countries were being handed out their own unique website addresses to navigate the new online world. So, for example, .uk for the UK, .au for Australia, and .ie for Ireland. Eventually, pretty much everywhere was given its own domain address, and that included the small Caribbean island of Anguilla, which landed the address .ai, and it's turned into a potential future jackpot for them. The boom in artificial intelligence means that more and more companies and individuals are paying Anguilla, a British overseas territory, to register their new websites with the .ai tag. One businessman is paying over $700,000 a year for the address, and the island has a population of only 16,000, so they may end up doing very well out of it accidentally. Well, speaking of technology, this week the leaders of the world's biggest tech companies, including Meta, Google and OpenAI, gathered at the White House to support an initiative by Melania Trump to teach kids about AI. The video footage of Donald Trump being feted by Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg and Sam Altman left the world in no doubt about where the tech world's loyalties lie.
Thank you for incredible leadership, including getting this group together.
Thank you, Bill. That was very nice.
Thank you so much for getting us all together, and thank you for being such a pro-business, pro-innovation president. It's a very refreshing change. We're very excited to see what you're doing to make all of our companies and our entire country so successful.
It's incredible to be among everyone here, particularly you and the First Lady.
Well, that was the message. It was pretty clear. And it seems that the US wants to loosen the regulation on its tech sector. But as Google has just been hit by a nearly €3 billion fine by the European Commission, it's clear the EU wants to clamp down. How will the EU react to this latest love-in between big tech and Trump? Well, we're joined by Liz Carlin, publisher of TheBriefing.ie and political scientist and journalist with The Journal and The Examiner, Marion McKeown. You're both very welcome to the programme. First to you, Liz. It was quite a, how would you describe it? I was going to say quite a show of power, quite a level of kowtowing, but it's performance and it's theatre and it's messaging, isn't it?
It is theatre. And I think the fact that we all know and remember that many of these tech executives only last year or the year before were very critical of Trump is kind of part of the point. You know, it's a display of power by Trump, but it's also part of some very kind of business transactional relationships that have developed where the Trump administration, as long as you show enough loyalty, is acting as a kind of bulwark for these companies, in particular against European regulation. But get on the wrong side of him and your fortunes could end up reversing quite starkly.
So where does that leave the EU as a regulator in relation to technology and digital services acts and all kinds of things versus the US? Are we on a bit of a collision course on this issue?
It really sounds like we are. So there was something quite exemplary this week around Google faced two kind of anti-monopoly cases, one in the US, one in Europe. In the US, while there had been kind of threats to break up the business, a judgment came through that essentially gave a little slap on the wrist to Google and they can kind of go on their way. Whereas then yesterday, when a European investigation came through, they got a $3 billion fine. And straight away, Donald Trump was out on his social network sort of threatening more tariffs. The administration has threatened kind of visa restrictions on individuals, talking about sanctioning individuals, you know, who might work in, for example, Comisú na mBan here in Dublin for regulating.
So it's a complete industry. Contrast in approach. Marion, when you saw it, I watched the video of this choreographed love-in, I suppose, and televised love-in. But at the end of the day, once the television cameras are on, you always suspect that people will say the thing that they don't necessarily mean and that people speak their minds in private. Is it inevitable that you'll end up, when it's staged like this, that you'll end up with this kind of thing?
Well, this is very much playing to Trump's tune, and Trump wants performative loyalty and performative devotion and performative praise. And we heard in the clips you played there, Richard, it was Tim Altman, who, it's not just good enough to adore Trump, you've got also get a dig in at the previous administration. So Tim Altman saying it makes a refreshing change, little slap at Biden there. And then we heard Tim Cook, who has just become the Trump worshipper in chief. And, you know, Tim Cook has reason to do this. If you look at since 2017, he has moved a lot of his iPhone production to India. This, a massive part of it. He has a supply chain network that Apple has built up over three decades in about 43 different countries. This business that Trump is leaning on, all these tech titans to bring everything home, Tim Cook has got to, or he sees it, and his shareholders no doubt see it, that he has got to keep Trump sweet, and that involves bringing a big lump of gold into the White House a couple of weeks ago, and this kind of slavish, obsequious performance yesterday. And, you know, I'm not clear what this is even about. Like, Melania Trump starts off by saying it's a beautiful event, we're living in a world of wonder. It's all this kind of hazy, fuzzy, gauzy. You know, in her last iteration as a first lady, she was all against anti-bullying, and she doesn't seem that concerned now about the role of tech in development of children or the problems involved therein.
Insofar as it is, Marion, about loyalty. Yeah. And loyalty is something, and it's a display, a public display of loyalty in a way.
Absolutely.
The Trump administration apparently has a loyalty chart.
Yes.
Where certain companies get certain scores.
You get gold stars if you're good. And if you're not good, you don't get invited to the party at all. We saw Elon Musk nowhere to be seen. And you can't help but wonder, Richard, if his announcement of his $1 trillion, another very gauzy optic, I think, his $1 trillion pay package was coincided to coincide with this very slavish display in the White House of all the other tech giants except him. So we've seen the price of crossing Trump, you know,
clear out there, yeah, what the price of crossing him is. Liz, before we leave the issue of regulation, where do you see this going in terms of what the EU's response? They're watching all of this. They're also feeling a level of pressure coming from the United States in relation to regulation. Is there much scope for compromise, or where does it land?
So where we are at the moment is the EU and the Trump administration kind of agreed the headline of this, you know, tariff/trade agreement. That's still being worked out. So everything feels kind of up in the air. And there seems to be tension within the commission itself. So you have Ursula von der Leyen, who's much more the kind of good cop and going over and shaking hands and doing all of the kind of more conciliatory stuff. And her sole focus is competitiveness within Europe and economic growth. But there seems to be quite a bit of tension between her and one of the vice presidents who is in charge of anti-competitiveness. So she's the Spanish commissioner. She's from the kind of centre left. And she is very much taking a much stronger stance and saying we will not allow these, you know, the Digital Services Act, Digital Markets Act, the AI Act, regulations that have been quite hard fought over the last few years.
So there's a lot of pressure coming on the EU, but it hasn't necessarily fully worked out what its position will be.
It hasn't.
There
doesn't seem to be a kind of single view within the commission either around this. So it's sort of all to play for.
Now, Marion, in other things, the question of Trump and tariffs and whether the Supreme Court is going to legally endorse the tariffs, which have been found to be illegal under a federal court, but it's due to go before the Supreme Court. There's an awful lot at play there, isn't there? Because if those tariffs are not going to happen now, it opens up a whole Pandora's box of money that's been paid in. And what happens to Trump's fiscal deficit and American debt?
Absolutely. I mean, there are about three different parts. Well, there are a lot more, but we can talk about three of them very quickly. The first is that the Congressional Budget Office had estimated that the Trump's tariffs would help to pay off America's national debt is at about $37 trillion and counting at the moment. It's expected to rise to $150 trillion in the next 30 years. I mean, these are eye-watering numbers. So the CBO had thought, okay, well, we're going to make about $4 trillion in these tariffs over the next 10 years. That will offset the cost of Trump's price increase, the tax cuts in his big, beautiful bill, because, you know, about $4.1 trillion $1 trillion in tax cuts are going to take effect over the next 10 years, mostly for wealthy Americans and corporations. So they thought, OK, you know what, the tariffs will cover that. Well, now it looks like the tariffs won't cover that, because I really don't see, and I'm saying this just from the basis of law, and I know the Supreme Court at the moment has become very ideological, and the conservative supermajority has made some quite bizarre rulings, I think it's fair to say, in the past couple of years. But in this, Article 1 of the Constitution is so clear. It says the power to set taxes and tariffs is with Congress. And now there have been half a dozen different acts enacted since the Constitution. Some of them do delegate power to President Trump under specific circumstances. But the 1977 Act that he chose was completely the wrong act. He could have done all this with the 1974 Act, which allows up to 15% tariffs to be imposed by the president for up to 150 days, and that could be renewed by Congress. But he went in like a bull in a china shop. And, yeah, and
if the Supreme Court goes against the administration on it and basically says, no, these are illegal, is there an option to just go and do it through Congress where he has a majority and he'll get it through anyway?
No. He can go back and use the 1974 Act, as I said, and get, you know, and he will almost certainly get a 15% tariff for 150 days through Congress, which can be renewed. But if the Supreme Court knocks this down, then Trump claimed last Tuesday he had already collected $17 trillion in tariffs. I can tell you that's not true, but he has collected at least $100 billion. Now, all of these people in this ruling, certainly the five companies involved, will be entitled to full refunds. The court may narrow it, the Supreme Court, if it does decide that Trump's tariffs are unlawful, it may just narrow it to those five companies, but then it will open the floodgates for a cascade of literally copycat sort of lawsuits. But Wall Street is looking at this, and this is a fascinating little twist. Wall Street is thinking, now it looks like the Supreme Court might knock this down, and if it does, there's going to be $100 billion to be reclaimed. Why don't we get in on the act? So they're offering, the financial services company are saying to these small importers who don't have the legal muscle or the money or the time to sue Trump individually, why don't you sell us your tariff refund for, say, 20-30% of what you paid? Yes, so we'll go and pursue it and we'll keep the rest.
Everything can become a tradable commodity and a buck can be made.
Exactly.
We'll have to see how the Supreme Court goes. Thank you very much for joining us, Liz Carolyn and Marion McKeown.